Hey, welcome to Hindsight, the podcast. I'm your host, Lee Jones, and I'm thrilled to embark on this journey of exploration with you. We often find ourselves reflecting on the choices we've made and wondering how our lives might have unfolded differently if we had taken a different path. Here's the beauty of hindsight. It gives us a chance to gain wisdom and learn from our past decisions. Look, this podcast is a platform to dig deep into those pivotal moments and uncover the invaluable lessons hidden within. Look, I'm Lee Jones, your host, and I couldn't be more excited to have you on board. So let's dive right in and explore the fascinating realm of decisions on Hindsight the Podcast.
When you look back in hindsight, everything is 2020. In hindsight, we make mistakes, we're learning from it. In hindsight, it should be your today and your tomorrow. In hindsight, it's so much clearer now.
This is Hindsight the Podcast, and introducing your host, Lee Jones.
Hey, welcome to Hindsight the Podcast. I'm your host, Lee Jones. And today, I have a true tech industry dynamo, Aisha Brown, also known as Tech Picasso, as a senior producer at Xbox. She's a creative visionary who seamlessly blends innovation and leadership. But Aisha's story goes beyond tech. She proudly served in the U.S. Air Force and in the Marine Corps before joining Microsoft. Her passion for mental health advocacy, especially within the military, gaming, and the LGBTQIA plus communities, drives her philanthropic initiatives. I always have a problem with that word, but I'll push forward. When not shaping the future of tech, Aisha enjoys gaming, bodybuilding, creating documentaries, and spending quality time with family. She's also a dedicated mentor, serving on the board of directors for Women in Tech Hollywood and creating coding careers. Welcome, Aisha. How are you doing today?
I am doing good. All is well. I have coffee.
I have coffee, too. First thing, we're on the same time zone, so it's kind of early in the morning, and I appreciate you taking the time to come on here and talk with us today.
No, absolutely. I'm honored to be here.
Good, good. So how... I just want to hit this right, because you're like AKA Tech Picasso, right? Who came up with that name, and how did that come about?
So heavy on the tech, because when it comes to building, breaking, playing, creating, like, you know what? I got to bring you down here to my office one day so you can see my digital Thunderdome pretty much in here. And then art. A lot of my art I have archived on Instagram. I'll probably open it up later on this afternoon. But I learned somewhere along my journey about 7 years ago that I can look at someone and recreate them from memory with my eyes closed.
Wow.
And it's like, you're like heavy in tech, but you're like Picasso.
Yeah.
And then it was actually a kid that gave me that name, and it kind of worked out.
You know what? I dabbled a little bit when I was younger in art. Never knew how to paint, but I was decent in drawing, you know, freehand drawing. But I think, I didn't lose my talent. I can still draw, but I just never really pursued it. And looking at this, you know, your resume, man, and thank you. One, let's bring this back real quick, because I'm not going to let that one skate by. I'd love to come to your office and check out what you do over there. That'll blow my mind.
Happy to have you down.
Now, I'm not a gaming person. I used to game a lot when I was younger, right? I got a little age on me now. And I used to play Madden a lot, for the most part. And I'm going to take you way back. I don't know if you know this game called Castle Wolfenstein.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I used to play like the original, like way back when, right? So it's pretty creative. But as Madden started getting, you know, developing and all the buttons and the keystrokes, right? I couldn't keep up, and I could do like one play. And if it was like somebody who really knew how to play, I was out of my league. So I find it challenging. But what led you to gaming and tech and stuff like that? What led you to wanting to be a designer?
So I'm not a designer. I always tell people that. I tell people I'm not a designer by title. Do I design? Yes, for myself, but not by title. What put me into gaming was, so there's no secret, I served pre and post Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're serving, you know, I joined the military because I wanted to serve my country. Like, I wanted to serve my country. I knew that. But at the same time, you join when you're 17, 18, 19. What are you doing at those times? You're like figuring out your life. You're breaking hearts, making hearts. You're figuring out who you are. You're growing into your adulthood. I knew I was gay, but I knew I wanted to serve. But I knew my quote unquote job wouldn't allow me to do that. So it was just something I had to keep to myself, which I did. But what I learned was, while everyone else was on deployments, on Skype calls and talking to their loved ones, I could be on my game, on a headset, talking to an avatar, and nobody would have to know. Like, I could just exist in that space. So gaming really became my safe space. And there was a lot of things that happened along my journey to where it always came back to gaming being my safe space.
I tell you what, I remember Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And what's crazy about it, I was in the Army, and, you know, I mean, every service, doesn't really matter, has, you know, gay individuals, LGBTQ, you know, all. I don't think back then transgender. LGBT. Yeah, no, well, yeah, transgender and stuff was really a thing, right? Maybe it was, but it's really prevalent now. But the point is, I remember those times, and I remember having friends who were secretly hiding that, right? And as a unit, we knew. I was in an MP unit, and I don't want to name names. But we knew, because the bottom line was, can this person, do they have my back, right? Will they be able to do what they need to do, their job? And that's really what care, because, you know, me personally, all that other stuff was their business, right? And I'd support them in anything, just like they support me in the things that I wanted to do, right? And that's just how we existed. So I thought it was crazy how that all played out. And you've seen a lot of people's lives get upended because, you know, during that time, you know, being put out the military or whatever the case may be. And I just wonder, you know, yours, you kind of retreated into your gaming, which is a good escape, right? But how did you feel during that time?
So make no mistake, it wasn't a retreat. It's where I could go. It's where I could go. So I tell this story sometimes, but I was in the Marine Corps at the time, but I was still dating one of my airmen, one of my airmen that I served with. And she, being a preacher's child, you know what comes with that, that you don't want to disappoint your parents. But I was on deployment with the Navy. And I'm not sure if you've ever been on ship. There's something called River City. River City is when all of the communications go, you're not allowed to connect out. No one can connect in. You're just handling the mission at sea. We were in River City for about 2 weeks. And this is in February of 2000. And it just turned 2011. And we're in River City for 2 weeks. I come back online. And we always play Final Fantasy together. So I get online and my whole group's like, hey, Aisha, you good? And I'm like, I'm fine. Why? What's up? Let's game. They're like, no, are you good? I'm like, I'm fine. What's up? And then they're like, she doesn't know. And I'm like, I don't know what. And they tell me that this woman I love committed suicide while I was in River City. And because I'm gay and because our commands can't know, nobody told me, never got a Red Cross message. I can't tell the people who I'm working with how I feel. And like, and then she wrote me a note. I got her letters after the fact, but it was like, I'm tired of hiding. I'm tired of not being able to. And then of course a slap in the face is 9 months later, Don't Ask, Don't Tell is repealed. But like, I literally just had to suffer in silence through it, because whatever was happening, I couldn't even talk about it, acknowledge it publicly, because it would have cost me my job. And at the time, you know, my daughter was one. So it was like, I can't, I don't want to be unemployed and have to struggle because she didn't ask for this. So it's just a, when I say like, that was the community, I was like, hey, talk to us. It, like, we got you. Like, and that was the community that had me. Like, I could get up in the middle of the night and just have somebody there to talk to when the people around me, like your brothers and sisters can only do so much because you know this, being in the military, everybody ain't your brother or sister.
Oh no.
We might all wear the same uniform, but we don't have the same morals. We don't have the same values.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. And I don't even know what to say because it's a feeling. It's an experience that many won't ever experience. But I do have a question, a little off topic. You're in the Marines. How long were you in the Marines?
I did 12 years in the Marine Corps.
How was it being a female in the Marine Corps? How was that?
So it's interesting. I'm doing a doctoral program right now, and my dissertation topic is called None of the Heroes Were Black Girls. And it's going through a journey of my life, my experiences. Not so much, I'm looking at all the industries that I've had a pocket in. What I found very unique to just my story, I'm the only person that I know that can say this in the Marine Corps. From the time I got to recruit training, literally, actually, yeah, because I had Robin. The first time I got to boot camp until I actually really started having adversity in my career. My entire, every rank, every cycle, I always had strong Black female leadership in my chain. And when I lost that, I became a target. Because I was told I got promoted too fast. I got told, you know, women don't belong here. Even, mind you, I'm outperforming my peers by a long shot. You know, even, but it's distinctively different. I joined the Marine Corps because the Marine Corps was the branch that you could get promoted based off yourself, you know, your merits, how you perform. And if I don't know anything else, I know I'm gonna show up and show out. So I was like, that's the branch. Cause I like being an airman, but I was still too close to New York and 9/11 kind of took a number on me. So I had to work some things out, came back into the Marine Corps better than before. And it was a beautiful experience. But I know that when you don't have leadership that looks like you, because it's a white male dominated branch, it plays a role because you're battling stereotypes, you're battling micro, hell, you're battling just aggression, period. Not even microaggressions. The aggression is just there. It's not even passive, it's active aggression. So I will say that although there are parts of it that I love, knowing now what I know, I would have did 4 years and kept it moving.
Yeah. Wow. For me, you know, being a Black male, and I was in the Army, right? So you guys trash on the Army a lot of times. And I think we throw, you know, sling some terms at the Marines as well, right? But there's always that respect and that admiration for the things that you do and what the Army does, the Navy does, the Air Force does. But I do recall, you know, you go through it, and I had good leadership, but I did have, you know, it is predominantly white, right? But in the earlier years, I'm blessed because I did have some good white male leadership. They were really good. Like, and I tell the story of First Sergeant, you know, he used to always get on me, and he brought me into the office one day because I did something else, and he saw me about to tear up. And he was like, look, Private, because I was a private early. He's like, look, Private, as long as I'm on you, that means I haven't given up on you. When I stop, that means I gave up on you, right? And so I got a different appreciation for his leadership. But as it got later on, I knew I had to take on a better role as a leader, mm-hmm. right? An African-American leader, right? So I took those lessons, good and bad, and I tried to create myself into what I believe my soldiers needed as a leader. And that's how I led. So anyway, long story short, and it was a long story. I can appreciate what you said, but I can't relate. You know what I mean? Because I know it's bad for African-American females, period. In like all aspects of probably life in America. It's not bad. It's not horrible right now. But there are those things where you get marginalized or, you know. And now with that being said, you're transitioning from the military and you go into this tech world. Did you bring a whole bunch of credentials and everyone was just waiting for you to, you know, leave the military and come into this space? Or was there a challenge in that as well?
Oh, no, I had a plan. One thing about me, I'm always going to have a plan.
So let's stop right there. Let's stop right there. Okay. You had a plan, because now I want to focus just a little bit on the transition. So give me your step-by-step plan, because this is important. Like when we come out of the military, there's some anxiety and some trepidation coming out because we're not prepared. And to hear you say, I had a plan.
I'm a pushback on that. It's not that we're not prepared. People fail to prepare. Everybody has their prep time. Every single person. Some people don't make time to prepare. That's the difference. I will never say we're not prepared to transition. Yes, we are. I've been planning my transition since the day I got in.
Okay, that's a great point, because, you know, I'll say I didn't prepare. You know why? Because I was in so long, and I was nervous about it. Right? I was in for 26 years, and that's what I knew. You get what I'm saying? And so. I held on to it too long because it was a crutch. I held on to it too long. And when it came time, it's like, it's time to get out. I was nervous. Now it worked out, but you're absolutely right. And I appreciate you, pushing back on that term. I didn't prepare myself, but go ahead.
I can ask every single service member right now, when's your EAS or EOS? And they'll tell you what day they get out.
Yeah.
And then the next question I go is, what have you been doing to prepare? And I'm like, okay, this right here is a you problem. So for me, I came to work one day and this is right after Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I got a Roman Catholic CEO who would come to my office, light candles, and try to pray the gay out of me. And I said, I'm going to get out the Marine Corps. I was like, I'm done. I need to finish this contract, get out the Marine Corps, and I'm going to Microsoft. I literally said, I'm getting out the Marine Corps and I'm going to Microsoft. So I started doing research. How can I get to Microsoft? Where are their offices? Where are they located? Because I knew what I wanted to do. So I found a SkillBridge program. I found MSSA, the Microsoft Software and Systems Academy. I didn't care what the program did. I saw that it guaranteed one in-person interview at Microsoft headquarters. I said, if you put me in front of somebody, I will get hired. So while we're in the program, they give you like a set curriculum that you're learning, blah, blah, blah. I went to the far left and really started to immerse myself in what new technology was available and just started creating and building stuff. And, you know, I created a life partner, like a smart mirror that did everything. At first, it just told me the weather, the news. Then I added some cognitive services on top of it. I put facial recognition. So now it could determine everyone in my class, my daughter. And I would have it, I put sentiment analysis on it. So now it's like, good morning. Why do you look sad? It would tell me the weather. It had my daughter's schedule in it. It let her know what assignments were due for the day. Then I don't know if you have children, but something about when they go to school, they don't come back with the same items they left with. Like jackets. So I RFID chipped all of her clothes, cataloged it. So now based off the weather, the smart mirror could tell her, hey, the weather is going to be this. Here are the outfits that you could put together. And it was just me playing with it and building it and just like, oh, I want to learn how to do this. I want to learn how to do this. And just, I kept going. So when I got to my interview, I had plenty of things to talk about because I didn't mind failing. Like I've never minded. The military has this rigid mindset that you can be an E4 on September 30th, PCS on the 31st, show up October 2nd, and now you're an E5, and everyone expects you to be that E5, and they don't give you time to make mistakes. They don't give you time to learn what that new responsibility is. It's like, no, you are this, you will be this. What I love about tech is like, hey, we don't get better if we don't fail. So, you know, just keep going till you hit a wall. And when you hit that wall, We're all here and we're going to push through it with you. And that's what I love about being here. I knew I wanted to get into gaming once I got here because I love to create. I always like to give back to the communities in which I came from. And the gaming community is one of the tightest knit. When you find your community, there are certain gaming spaces I won't go in because they're toxic. And that's okay. I love that for them over there. Like, what's toxic for me is therapy for somebody else. I don't force myself into spaces that I don't require spaces to accommodate me. You know, I go to what feels good for me. I'm not going to be like, no, I'm here, so I want you to behave like this. I'm like, y'all do that over there. I'm going to be over here. And that's okay for me. So I built my community. I love the people that I play with. It's a good vibe. It's a good time.
There's a time that you can start transitioning from the military. So did you start way before that time? Like, because you just said, when I get out, I'm going to work for Microsoft, right? Did that come at the time when that clock starts ticking, right? When you start taking your, tap?
It was way before taps and tabs.
Way before that. Okay.
It's kind of like people who wait until they get out to go to school. And yeah. It's like, I tell the Marines every day, I'm like, if y'all can be at the club every single night, you can be taking one class. Especially because it's free while you're in. Like, tuition assistance is not, it's not a gift. It's a benefit. Like, use your benefits. A lot of people don't even look at the benefits that they have, what's afforded to you, and how to leverage them. Because how many service members do you see where their spouses won't go to school, don't have jobs? And because the service member might not understand, know, or ask the right questions, they're not even communicating to their own family, like building the family dynamic. It's just, I go to work, I do this, I come home, I don't communicate. And then the cycle just keeps repeating. I was all about information. When you know the information, you have no choice but to do better once you know.
You spoke candidly about your experience in the military with your girlfriend mm-hmm. at the time. And I know that you're a passionate advocate for mental health now. Did that kind of fuel that passion, or was there something else? And how do you believe it intersects with the work you're in the tech world?
I've lost so many friends, colleagues, peers along the way. I mean, hell, I just lost another one last month. Just to themselves. I think the culture is trying to shift. This next generation, they don't care. And I love that for them. I love the generation that is coming up right now because they're like, no, you're not going to talk to me like you're crazy. You're not going to talk to me like I'm subhuman. I love the boundaries that they put in place. Like, they're trying to protect their mental health. They're trying to be, they saw what happened to the generations before them and they're opting out of it. And I think that's very, very, very important. I guess if I'm going to tie it back to how it got me to where I am, when you get tired of seeing people, I can't even say I got tired of seeing. There has to be a solution. And it's not an employer's job. The military, it's just an organization. People believe the hype of what they think the military is, how they should conduct themselves. I got to be hard. You can't be hard if you're not here. So how do we keep you here?
Yeah, there's a lot of initiatives, thankfully, that are going on to show that it's okay to raise your hand, tap out, say you need some help, right? But it's still, I mean, it's been so long that stigma has been in this society, right? That it's hard to break, and it's still uncomfortable, especially from a military environment, to say, hey, I need help, right? Because you're taught, you're good. Keep going. Take some Motrin. Do this, right? Drink water. You know, whatever the solution is mm-hmm. from their perspective, right? But it doesn't touch the mental a lot of times. So I agree with you. It's moving in the right direction, but it's a slow process.
Have a lot of leadership displaced from the troops that they are leading. You know, a lot of these officers, you know, came straight from college, had the college life experience. Maybe they had the balanced home life experience. A lot of their troops don't. And then the officers who didn't have that, I mean, they feel like imposters in their own roles. So how do you create space for people to just accept who they are, acknowledge where they're going, and be okay with making mistakes along the way? People are so afraid to fail.
Yeah.
It's crippling. You make one mistake and you're like, oh my God, my life is over. And it's like, no, it's not. I have a baby sister who's in the Marine Corps, and I tell her, like, now when I look at the military, it's like a snow globe.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a snow globe. I said, and you enter the snow globe willingly. People go, oh, I'm going to the civilian world. I'm like, you were born here. This is your birthright. They create this division between civilians and veterans. And it's like, you realize you were a civilian first, right? You didn't just wake up a service member. It's crazy to me. I see it with like my male Marines. They'll be like, oh, but it's a girl. I'm like, you are 19 years old. The last at least 17, 18 years of your life, I know there were women in school, in your house, around. Like, why is this a foreign concept to you? Because you spent 3 months in boot camp, 6 months in MCT or ITB. Like, and I blame the leadership, because leadership teaches it. So if you poison the well when they're young, they're going to grow up with that bias until it has to be forced out of them, or they learn to do better.
So did you go through Marine boot camp or?
Mm-hmm.
So you went to, how was that? Did you get brainwashed? I say that, and you know, you're very grounded, right? And you look like you stayed in your space the entirety, right? But it seems like it's a grueling, you know, few months for the Marines. I know it's bad for the Army, but I always lend respect to the Marines, because that seems like that's horrible. So how was that for you?
I grew up in Southside Jamaica, Queens, on a block with 17 boys. Boot camp was another day outside for me. That I tell people, like, boot camp was jungle gym for me. It wasn't anything that I wasn't already doing. All of my uncles, three of my uncles were Marines. And the other ones, he's an Army post commander right now. So it's nothing they weren't already introducing me to. When I got to Marine Corps boot camp, I was like, okay. I had been through Air Force boot camp, and I was like, Air Force boot camp, I call it boot camp for serial killers, because it's so detailed. It is. That's why I can walk in a room and notice what's off immediately. I can walk in a room, analyze it, and decide instantly if I want to be in that room or if I'm going somewhere else. Hey, that's what Air Force boot camp did for me.
Yeah.
Marine Corps boot camp, I can clear that room in under a minute, be in and out. Like, but it was a great experience. I would do it again. I would do boot camp again.
You are awesome. So I would not call my training a jungle gym. So for me, you know, my personal experience, I wasn't really even looking at going into the Army. And I think it was not 9/11. What was the one? The Gulf War. You know, it was a time I saw that on TV, kind of inspired me for whatever reason. And the other part of it was I knew I was super undisciplined. I knew that within myself, right? So I figured, you know, I'll go in, you know, have a job. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland, by the way.
I can
have
hear
a
it.
Job and, you know, get discipline, right? Because I really didn't know what to expect. Basic for me was exactly what I thought it would be. I was prepared for the mental part, because you see that everywhere, right? So, you know, they're going to talk trash to you. But would I do it again? No.
See, not at all. I don't know. Recruit training for me was just, the mental part was so easy because I know how to compartmentalize. I learned that very, very early as a child. I learned how to separate the why am I here from what am I doing and why. Like, I always knew my why. I knew exactly why I was there, so I never questioned my decision. I was like, I know why I'm here. And if I keep my why, then I'll keep going. I'll say I didn't get brainwashed because I'm telling you, being gay has its perks. I never had to tether myself to the surface. It didn't become my identity, right? Because IAsia always got to be IAsia. You know, I was stationed at Dover, my first Air Force base. I'd be in Philly every night, Jersey or New York, because I would go where I could be me. So I always kept up. I was never the person that stayed in the barracks or the dorms every day, all day. I only had military friends. No, I was outside. I had friends in colleges. I had friends just, I was in Baltimore, acting a mess, getting good seafood. I was at Howard Homecoming. I was in spaces where my military friends were not. So I always had people around me. I always built my network to people who were doing other things. So I knew the world was bigger than the snow globe that I was looking at.
I try to keep myself as well. And I think I did a pretty good job. And mine is probably a little different to yours. And maybe it's not, right? But my core thing was, you know, I recognized and I understood the rank system. You know, I understood the rules and how it worked, right? But how I treated a person, it didn't really matter what your rank was, right? And so I tried to keep that through. I didn't try, actually, you know, I did. And that helped me to keep myself grounded. So when you start making rank, I used to see people change. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing to change because you have that responsibility. And sometimes you need to utilize that rank to get things done, but not just because you have the rank. You know what I mean? And so I was always proud internally of myself because I was able to keep myself, you know, during those periods and still continue to treat people like people, the private to the colonels to the generals, right? I would treat them as the men and women that they were. So I'm glad I didn't get brainwashed, but I don't really think the Army gets you brainwashed like the Marines do.
See, I think that's an individual. There are people who still walk around right now in their uniforms because the same people you see on the way up, you see on the way down. So I treat everybody with respect. But at the same time, there are some people who do not know who they are without that uniform. And they refuse to just be who they were born to be because they're tethered to how that you can don and clear the uniform for the last time. Some people never mentally take it off. Never. And for me, it was so important for me to mentally take that uniform off because I can't exist as myself still trying to be who I was over there. You can't work at Wendy's with McDonald's practices. You can't be a doctor trying to bring firemen tools. You have to be who you are in that space and let go of whatever baggage you're carrying. It can't come with you. It can't. You won't fit through the door.
Right. Man, okay. So, look, now you're awesome, man. I appreciate you coming on the episode for real and just getting to meet you. And that's how it was, right? I went online and I read up on you, saw some photos of you, you know, and you just get an idea. You just get a generalization of who this person is, right? So I wanted to come into this conversation to get to know, to meet a friend. Right. To get to know you a little better. And I appreciate you sharing the things that you're sharing. And then also the things that you're sharing will benefit, you know, some service members who are looking to transition out, because that's a magical and powerful lesson. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you need to prepare mentally to get out as well as take those actions that's going to set you up in a good spot. Right. So I appreciate that. You're going to say something?
I give everyone, like when I mentor, because I mentor a lot of transitioning service members. I've brought a lot of transitioning service members into tech.
Okay.
Couple things that I say for people transitioning, like this is your life. It's not like the military. There is no hit list for transition to where someone's going to be like, hey, and you need to do this now. And then this is welcome to being an adult. Now we're going to figure out what your insurance is like. We're going to figure out. Your dental, I'm serious. You would be surprised how many people don't consider these things. They just, because in the military, you can just wait until you end up on somebody's hit list and someone tells you to go do it. And it's like, figure out your price. What's your starting price? What are you? And they would be like, you know, I just want to make $60,000. I'm like, where are you going to live? Like, yeah. Where are you living with? Like, understand your value. If you're trading your time for money, you at least need to make it worth it. I recommend this book called, The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer, because people have to learn how to separate themselves from what was. Like, you know, being a gunnery sergeant of Marines does not define who Aisha is. It was a chapter. What is this next chapter going to look like? I tell everyone to write down, what do you not want? Especially if you're married. When I'm interviewing candidates, I'll be like, all right, are you willing to travel? They're like, yes. And I'm like, hey, slow down. What does your wife think? I said, 'cause if you tell me, you just told me you had 12 deployments. If you get to pick this next chapter of your life, why are you going to do exactly what you were doing before that put your marriage in stress? Because you don't have to travel. You don't have to take a job that travels. Like, give me everything you don't want and some of the things that you do want. And maybe we can find a common ground in there. Like, it's panic mode. People get so panicked when they're trying to get out. Like, I have to have a job. Like, take your time. The reason why most service members quit their first job is because they just take anything to say they have a job. Vice actually, like, do some vetting and teaching them how to vet an employer. I've walked out of plenty of interviews. Like, and that's okay.
Right.
You ever sit down for an interview and it's like, if the vibe is off, if I can catch a microaggression, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to end this interview right now. Thank you for your time. You don't have to accept a job. You know, what does creating your own job look like? What is creating your own? What are the steps? What are the resources? There's so many resources available to veterans. They just don't read the handbook. The VA gives you that handbook. I read that entire handbook, front page to last page. There's so many things out there. Do your disability. Like, they're just simple. Like, oh, I don't have any money coming in. Did you file for disability? No. Why? Like, ego don't pay the bills.
That is a topic that I still to this day am always encouraging service women and men to take advantage. And it's not even taking advantage. It's yours. You earned it.
It's yours. I only did 4 years. Okay. And you were field artillery for 4 years. How's your hearing? People want to just suffer through it. Like, it's like it's a badge of honor. Like, it is not okay because you're taking benefits away from your children at this point.
Another bit of advice, you know, yeah, the military provides that training, that transition assistance. But there are also other people who are betting on you to be successful in your transition. And if you do, like Aisha says, just know that your time is coming to an end. And what do you want to do at the end of that time? Right. And just start focusing on those things that you need to do. That's something I didn't do because I really didn't know what I wanted to do. You know what I mean?
I tell people that all the time. Some people like what you did in the military, your past does not define your future. Just because you were motor T in the military does not mean you need to go be an auto mechanic somewhere. At 17, 18, 19, we were given jobs and we excelled. So if nothing else, you know how to learn. What do you want to learn? I tell people, what do you want to learn? And then they tell me what they did in the military, but they don't know how to articulate the skill sets that they bring with them. You know, whether it's project management, whether it's risk analysis there. But there's an education piece that comes with teaching them what they did and how it translates into other roles. And it doesn't matter what you did. You can always pull out the skill sets. I'm like, don't give me the responsibility. Give me the skill set. And I do that exercise with people because, you know, do you have conflict resolution? Okay. Are you a strategic thinker? Okay. And like we go down and we start pulling out the skills because I need them to see it. I don't want to tell people their worth. I want people to see, I did do this. Oh, wow, I did do this. And they're learning the language and how to talk back, you know, how to give it back to someone. And I'm like, all right, well, give me a time where you demonstrated this skill set and what were the results, and teaching them how to quantify the results. Where we are the poster children for, oh, I just, or I only. And it's like, no, take the just, take the only out. Don't minimize your work. Let's talk about what you did. Let's talk about how it affected the mission. Let's talk about the results. So really getting the doubt out of people, you're going to, because you're, the transition is going to have its own mental effect on you as you start to navigate, you know? I ask people, like, are you spending time with your family? Now that you get to be around your kids, are you present but not absent? Like, what are we doing? How do you start to make that transition from being so mission focused to, you know what? I'm going to make work fit my life, not life fit my work. Because no decision I make today at work, someone's going to die from. Like, it is not mission critical. That's why I think it's so important for people to get a grasp on who they are before they transition. If you don't know who you are before you transition, now's the time to start. Simple questions too. I'd be like, hey, what do you like to do? And they just stare at you. And I'm like, and I'll wait. I'm going to hold that space for as long as it takes.
I don't know why you said that. It reminded me of Cat Williams. I'll wait.
Yeah, I'll wait. Literally, I'll wait. But it's really hard for people to know who they are. And then one of the hardest things for me when I transitioned was I had to learn to talk about what I do. I so matter-of-factly talk about the things that I'm doing very nonchalantly. Like, yeah, I'm working on my doctoral degree here. I have an endowment scholarship in my name at this school over there. Like, I talk about things and I don't even pause to reflect at, like, the weight of it sometimes. So sometimes I even have to pull myself back and be like, yo, you really just did this. Like, acknowledge it. And I have to do that to myself. So I make sure that when I see it in other people, I'm like, hey, pause. Just acknowledge what you said. Like, you're the first in your family to serve. You're the first to go to college. Like honor that.
Nice. Hey, I got a it's not a crazy question, but since you are, what is it? The tech Picasso. If you could build, and you may have done it already, right? But if you could build a video game that represents your life journey, what would the gameplay be like? And what would the ultimate goal for players be?
I'm a New Yorker. I'm from Southside Jamaica, Queens. I will tell you, at 15, I never thought I would live to see 18. At 18, I never thought I'd live to see 21. I ain't even gonna hold you. I woke up on my 30th birthday and was like, oh, wow. Still here.
Yeah.
So what would the gameplay be? I can't really say because I'm in the middle of making something and it's
similar to this. Okay.
It very much so.
Yeah. Heavy, I got you.
Heavy on the similar.
Yeah.
But heavy on the, but the, I think people should thrive and create their desired outcome. But you got options. You always got options. Every single day, everything you do every single day is a choice. Everything is a choice. Waking up in the morning, getting out of bed, it's all a choice. What you wear, what you don't wear, what you put in your body, what you don't put in your body.
Choices. Yeah, I tell you what, that's part of what hindsight is about, right? Some of it is looking back in hindsight and looking at the choices that you've made, good and bad, and then reflecting on those choices and then kind of learning how to make better choices. If you're making bad choices, you're making great choices. You know?
Oh, no, make no mistake. I have ruined some things along the way, and that's okay.
You know what I'm saying, but it's about choices and understanding how to assess repercussions and the benefits and the rewards and all these different things of these choices, right? So I saw this one commercial and it was amazing. And it bottom line was, you're the sum of your choices.
Mm-hmm.
You're the sum. If you choose to wait till the last minute to prepare to transition out of the military, you know, you may not have an easy time transitioning. If you prepare yourself, you more than likely will have more options once you transition out. I mean, it just is what it is, right? And it's based off of those decisions. So, yeah, I appreciate that. But you said you're working on, so give me something that's not work-related
Gotcha.
But what are you currently working on, and what can we expect from you?
So I'm in pre-production right now for a documentary, and I don't know if you checked out my LinkedIn. There's a video on my LinkedIn of me and my dad. And
I did not see it, but I'll check it out as soon as I get off of here.
So my dad has cancer. He's terminal.
Okay.
The documentary is really based around, I mean, that man has lived.
Yeah.
He told me he left it all on the table. He said, I have zero regrets. I was like, all right. And that's how I want to live. Like, I want to leave it all on the table. So right now, the documentary I'm working on is called It's Your Wonderful Life. And it's going to be around end of life ceremonies for people who are in their terminal stages or their hospice stages, to where their families, their friends, their loved ones get to come together, essentially give them their flowers while they're alive, vice waiting for a funeral to talk to a box. So I've been working on that, and I've been going around the world just seeing how different tribes honor, you know, their passing. And just, it has been an amazing journey, just learning and being welcomed and being able to just, not only am I on that journey for myself and my family, but seeing how other people bring that honor and bring that love forward is just, it's been amazing. So I'm working on that. I'm working on my dissertation as well as a documentary to complement that.
Okay.
I'm working on bringing a Women in Gaming conference to California next year.
Oh, really? Okay. That's awesome.
And I'm working on my book. My book will be out May 21st next year.
Wow. All right. What's the book about? What's the premise?
So the book is Love Letters to My Daughter, because I didn't think that I would be alive to like raise her. I started from when she was little. I started an email address when I found out I was pregnant with her, and just, I wrote to her all the time. Like, just wrote to her all the time. And now that she's 14 and just this amazing person, I don't know how I got so blessed, but just an amazing human. It's all the things that I've learned in hindsight, really. Like, when I look at the world in its totality from where I'm at today, what are the things that I want her to know and be prepared for in case I'm not there, you know?
Definitely looking forward to that. I gotta ask a sneak preview question.
Let's go.
You're gonna be talking at the MIC, the Military yeah. Influencer Conference, this year in Las Vegas.
Yes.
And you got a little a taste of what you're going to be talking about.
A little bit.
Give me a little bit. Just a tiny bit. I'm gonna be there.
I'm like, you just spent 40 minutes with me, like 53 minutes with me. You already know. I'm heavy in depth about untethering and what does it look like to truly like honor your service, but you got to honor yourself first.
That's a powerful message. That's a powerful message that I believe needs to go out there. Right. And it's difficult. You know, I was, you know, because I'm still in the, you know, we're in the Southern California area. And I'm around a lot of military people as well. And I just look at them and I'm like, man, that was me. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but my whole point is your identity is really tied to the military. And there's nothing wrong with that as long as you understand that that's not you.
It's the longest temporary job you might have. The reason why I think it's so important for people to know who they are is because the military is very unpredictable. You can get into a fight and get kicked out. Anything can happen. You can get kicked out. You can be in the wrong relationship and get kicked out. So if a job defines you, if you can only see your worth through being in a job, you got to do some work, because you can still serve your country while not wearing the uniform. So just letting people know, like, nothing is the end of the world until it's the end of the world. Like,
nothing is the end of the world until it is the end of the world.
I don't know what else to say. Like, nothing is that detrimental. That's why I love this generation. They not answering their phone after 7 or after 6. Y'all don't pay this bill. I love this generation. Right. And I live right here. I can look at Camp Pendleton from my house. Listen, when I say I look at people and I just be like, right on. You see the young Marines and soldiers walking around in their cowboy boots, hats, and it's 99 degrees outside. And but I still love that they still have a bit of themselves in there, you know? I love that. They might look crazy, but.
Hey, you get everything in California.
Oh, yeah.
You get everything. But that's the beauty. That's the beauty of this place. They do not care.
No, not at all.
You know what I'm saying? You can be yourself here. I'll give that to California. So, Asia, how can the listeners stay updated on, you know, what you're doing or even get involved in some projects that you're working on?
Oh, I love to bring people along. I'm easy to find on LinkedIn or Instagram. I'm terrible on Facebook. I'm just terrible on Facebook. I leave my notifications off during the day. I check my LinkedIn regularly, though, because I get so many messages during the day. So I try to make sure I respond to everybody.
I can attest to that.
Yeah. I did. I responded. I do respond. I do read my own messages. Yeah, I'm very, very, very easy. I'm very personable. Make no mistake, though. Like, I don't disrespect people. But if you talk crazy, I just won't respond. So if I don't respond to you, it's probably because you said something crazy.
No, that's right. Hey, so I asked a few questions and great conversation. I appreciate you, just giving me some more tips right on how to go about life. But is there something that, you know, we didn't touch on that you'd like to bring up before we finish?
My word for the year, and you talked about it a little bit. My word for the year is discernment. And I think in every facet of my life, I'm reevaluating the people, the choices, who they are. Do they fit in my life? Why are they here? Why am I here? Why am I in this space? And if it doesn't make sense, don't do it. I'm honoring my no. I encourage other people to honor their no too, because that's how we get overwhelmed. That's how we get overworked. But I think discernment is it's the game changer. When you really understand who you are, where you are, and who's in the room with you, you start to move differently and you start to feel differently. So, and take care of your mental health. Like, this is not the 40s and the 30s. You're not shunned. That person at the front of the airport, of the airplane, says it best. Like, you got to put your mask on before you try to assist other people.
Yeah.
So if your mask ain't on and sealed, like, do that first.
Right.
When you get your seal tight, you can step out and help somebody else. But this year, it's all about discernment and really making sure I'm grounded, my family's grounded, and helping as many people as I can who want to help themselves.
Aisha, thank you so much for coming on the show. Your insights and experiences have, from my perspective, added immense value to the show, and I'm incredibly grateful for your willingness to share them. Your journey is not only inspiring, but I believe it's also a beacon of hope for those that are navigating their own paths. And once again, thank you for being a part of Hindsight, the podcast. And yeah.
I want everybody to win. I want everybody to win.
Keep making a positive. Yeah. And I know you will. And I know the people who you touch and inspire and look up to you will as well. And keep making a positive impact in the tech world. And I'm looking forward to hearing about the Women's Tech Conference that you're looking to do next year as well. So. Keep doing the good work.
Right on. Well, thank you. Pleasure to meet you.
Thanks for tuning in to Hindsight, the podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I know I did. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button to stay updated on future episodes packed with inspiring stories. Before you go, leave me a message with your thoughts, feedback, or suggestions for future topics. And if you're loving what you hear, please take a moment to rate this episode. Your feedback helps me to grow and reach more listeners just like you. So remember, life's a journey. Stay tuned, stay curious, and keep gaining wisdom through the power of hindsight. Until next time. Oh, and don't forget, subscribe, leave a message, and rate this episode.
When you look back in hindsight, everything is 2020. In hindsight, we make mistakes, we're learning from it. In hindsight, should be yesterday.